ground control to Major Tom.
Staunton wriggling his way to the post and right on the post. There are three there. It must be a try. Yes, it is. A second try for John Kelly. Now it's all there for the taking as Gloucester pick themselves up from underneath their own post. Tom.
Ground control to Major Tom.
This is Crotty. Oh yes, O'Gara is in! Another lead for Munster, and what a magnificent try!
Check ignition.
Fully controlled, oh, straight on! Now there will be no greater place in Munster history than the one reserved for the man who scores the special individual try.
Tom Savage of Three Red Kings. Tom, a much improved performance from Munster last weekend, dominant from start to finish against the Ospreys. You know, despite the fact that, look, the Ospreys didn't bring their strongest side, but at the end of the day, Munster can only beat what's in front of them, and I thought they went about it really, really well. I think the back row combination that Munster had out the last day was brutish, to say the least, and you know, Joey Carberry showing exactly why Munster wanted him down here in the southern part of the country.
In this kind of game, it's kind of like a no-win situation, really, because, you know, you either beat a second-string Osprey side fairly handy, and you were always expected to anyway, or you end up getting into one of those close games where you only pull away the last 20 minutes to maybe get a bonus point or whatever else. It tends to either go one way or the other. In the end, Munster got a, you know, 30-point win that they were well predicted to do beforehand. Not sure what the thoughts were pre-game, but I think, you know, I think when the Ospreys team came out, Munster knew they had that expectation put in front of them where they would be expected to win and win well. Anything less than a very dominant win would be seen as a failure. They had questions to answer after Glasgow, the manner of that defeat, but I think that this was a very strong side that Munster put out. And again, missing some quality guys still, but this week, the Ospreys, when they were coming to Musgrave Park, they were going to be under a world of pressure straight away. And Munster certainly put them away fairly handy. I thought the work in the forwards was absolutely outstanding. The ball carrying was very, very good. The work in transition at the breakdown was very, very good. Our rucking in general was very impressive. Set piece was much improved after Glasgow was fairly poor. It was a very, very good performance. You know, like you said there, Munster can only really beat what's put in front of them, but they made what was put in front of them look decidedly ordinary and put them away very, very easy.
Tom, Johan van Graan in the press conference today was going was keen to emphasise, I suppose, how Munster are trying to evolve this year, and that they're, you know, I think one try he took an awful lot of satisfaction from was that Arno Botha try. It was I think it was Peter O'Mahony coming up in defence with an intercept, offload to Goggin, offload to
Carberry, then to Sweetnam.
And then two more phases, two phases after Arno Botha is crashing over.
This is the kind of rugby we've been talking about. We were talking about this last season towards the end of the year, and we were talking about it in pre-season, that the way Munster would like to play is using the, passing the ball more between forwards and backs, obviously, but looking to play in transition. This was a transition try. Peter O'Mahony's intercept, his step up in the defensive line. We've spoken before about Munster's narrow alignment and defence, the opportunities it gives you when teams try to play around you, where you can come up in between the lines. That's what Peter O'Mahony did. His passing and pace was superb. We spoke there about how that ball went to Goggin, who broke very well, gave it to Carberry, who gave it to Sweetnam. But when Sweetnam made it all the way up to the 5-metre line before he got caught, who was there supporting him to clean him out? Peter O'Mahony and Tadhg Byrne, who made up an awful lot of ground to get up there to clean out that ball and to give it to Arno Botha, whose power in contact to take that up. It's last caught him standing but he was able to power around the corner and just bruise these guys over for a fantastic try. Really was a bit of the epitome of what Munster were trying to do. Play more expansively, play on the counter, and play on when you get the opposition transitioning over from attack to defence, because that's the easiest way to attack and that's where you get the most gains. I think I counted 4 out of the 7 tries that Munster scored were based on transition, either from a kick transition or from attacking the ruck and making ground based on that. So it really was a really good example as to what Munster can do when they've got the likes of Tadhg Byrne, Chris Clutie, James Cronin, Peter Romani in a pack. These guys who are all fantastic jacklers over the ball, who were fantastic guys for changing how teams play with regards to how they structure their attack. Chris Clutie in particular was an absolute menace at the breakdown for the Ospreys. They found it very, very difficult to manage him. And when you'd like to Tadhg Byrne, James Cronin and Peter Romani, who are also patrolling around there, it becomes very difficult to put phases together. And Munster were able to, you know, get all the ball they wanted from the Ospreys when the game was there to be won. And, you know, you don't really pick up a bonus point without conceding a try in the first half, you know, without really, you know, sticking the boot in on the opposition and punishing them, making them pay. If you look at Joey Carberry's try, when you see Ospreys going for a kick over the top from there, that'll give you an idea as to how risky and how dangerous Munster were at the breakdown, that they weren't even willing to try running that up for a phase even. They wanted to try and just go over the top. That brought Joey Carberry into the game. He's a guy, if you give him those transitions, he'll just eat you up. And that's what he did.
Yeah, I suppose one other try that I took great pleasure from was the Carberry restart, which saw Andrew Conway bide his time for the hit. Make the hit, ball is turned over. I think two phases sees Chris Clutie crash through, and then Cronin picks and James Cronin picks and touches out at the base of the post. Really, really snappy, direct, not messing around. Like you said, on that transition, on that turnover, when Munster got the, there was only one thing in their mind when they were in those areas, and that was try time. And it was very direct. It was very, and it was very impressive.
Oh, and you look at Munster looking to get that ball wide at all times. Like, in that instance there, it was Peter O'Mahony. He was assisted by Dan Goggin, who was there helping him keep his feet while he took that ball off and then managed to get that ball away with an outside hand offload. And Munster went away then. And I think there was Dan Goggin and Stephen Archer cleaned out. I think it was James Cronin, actually, who did the initial carry. Either way, the clean out that they had was just so quick, so snappy. With that kind of quick ball, you know, you had that ball going wide to Chris Clutie. He got an outside shoulder angle on the defender, and he's very, very hard to stop. He was unlucky enough to score a try himself under the post. And then James Cronin had the easiest job in the world, take that out at the back and dot down. But that, like you said there, Peter Romani went in and got that restart off the floor. Conway did a fantastic job, and it just looked like, you know, a championship level side who are going to be in the hunt for the silverware this year. You look at the squad that's there. You look at, like, as in that squad that's there, add Keith Earls, Conor Murray eventually. You add Chris Farrell, you add CJ Stander to that squad. That's a serious, serious bunch of players right there. And that's something. And Niall Scannell, Rory Scannell, these lads who were all, like, as in, who'd all be starting. That's a serious team, and that's the kind of depth now that Munster have built, where the likes of Jean Klein is coming off the bench, you know, for Tadhg Byrne, and it's like, geez, it just went from bad to worse for the Ospreys, where they were having to deal with Tadhg Byrne, who to me was the standout guy. Like, his 50 minutes that he put in this game, he looked beyond elite. He looked like a guy who was an established international who was coming back in. The way he plays the game in like with his basics are great, but the extras that he adds, his pace, his step, his ability to pass the ball, offload, he is such a talented player, and he's bringing that form from last year straight into this year, and it'll be interesting to see how he goes once he kind of scales up and we get the likes of CJ Stander around him, Jean Klein starting with him. You know, it'll be really interesting to see how he goes, because he's just an absolute, just a classy player. Like,
yeah, Munster have done some serious work on the recruitment side, and I suppose the key you know, the key for Munster this year, if they want to kick on and get over the line with regards to trophies, is keeping those guys fit. I mean, they were decimated last year. We saw Sam Arnold and Rory Scannell take so much of the punishment in the centres towards the end of last year. And I think Keith Earls touched on that today in the post-match, in the press conference as well, of, you know, you want to be able to share that workload across the season, and you want guys to be able to step in and step out. But, you know, I think whereas before Munster would have had bodies that could slot in, they now have guys who can slot in and don't weaken the side right across the positions. And there's a big difference between having replacements and having replacements of the same quality.
Well, look, this is what Leinster managed to do last year, where they essentially had two teams who could compete, you know, and sometimes they put out a third team that maybe, you know, that would get beaten on occasion. But getting those guys who can step in, with one guy being almost as, you know, as likely to do a fantastic job for you as the senior guy. This is what you want, you know, and you need that depth going down, you know, three guys deep at least, you know. News today that Tyler Blaindall is coming back into contention soon enough. You know, to have a guy like him coming in to take that workload off Joey Carberry, you know, because when you look at, you know, for me, the only area of depth where Munster have at the moment where they aren't really as strong as what we might be is scrum half. You know, I think that the lads who are below Murray, we have to look how Mathewson goes, of course. But when the guys who are below, you know, down the depth chart there, all have weaknesses to their games. And I think we saw even on Friday some of the weaknesses that there are to their games. That's the only area of concern for me. But even then, there's young lads who I quite like the look of. You know, Jack Stafford, I think, has got something about him. There's some other lads in the academy as well who I'm interested to see how they go. And it'll be one of those things where, you know, we really do need to, you know, like to see what the depth like is in Munster at scrum half. Because if they can get a guy who's, you know, obviously nobody's going to be able to replace Murray anytime soon, but who can take up that role of that second string guy behind him and push on to be that understudy who's got that, you know, youth on their side who can push on, that'll be a real you know, strength for Munster going forward. Open side as well, as I think, is an area. But when you look at the depth that's there, you know, Munster really this year are in a great position. And I was trying to think, when's the last time that I've seen a Munster squad this strong? And, you know, coming up on 2006, 2007, 2008, around that time. So, you know, those guys won a Heineken Cup. Munster will be at least looking this year to make a Pro 14 final, never mind a Champions Cup or a Heineken Cup final. So we'll see how it goes. But expectation will be the thing. You know, and like Keith Earls mentioned today, having those guys who can step in and do the job for you, the more guys who manage to step up and take the load off the top guys, the better. Because if Munster this year can get into that, you know, into the likes of April, May, June, with the likes of Chris Clutie, Chris Farrell, Ty Byrne, Joey Carberry, never mind Conor Murray, Keith Earls, you know, Peter Romani, all these lads, you know, fit and firing, Niall Scannell even, to keep these guys fit and firing, Munster would be competitive with absolutely anybody. And that's where they've got to be. But they've got to get that personnel right. And if they can get that personnel right, you know, and if they can keep the fitness levels up all across the, you know, your senior squad, who knows what'll happen.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, that is key. Cardiff, in Cardiff at the weekend, we'll come back to that closer when the teams are announced. But you know, I suppose if you are Johan van Grand, you have to be happy with where this team is right now, and you have to be, you know, not only that, but you have to be really, really looking forward to the season. And only three games in, we've seen some really, really good displays. We've seen a bit of a brain fart against Glasgow, but, you know, even Mike Sherry touched on it in the press conference as well today. Players really seem to be enjoying the new, I won't say the new Munster, but the new kind of the new emphasis that Munster are putting, especially on their attack, with more ball in hand, and players seem to be taking it to it like a duck to water.
Well, that's the thing. I think players are being trusted now to play play what they see in front of them. And obviously, that this is an instruction that almost every coach will give to their players. But sometimes they have more restrictions on them. I remember when Razzy Erasmus was with Munster first, any sort of turnover ball that Munster would get, it would be kicked away if it was in our own half. Now, you look at Munster playing all kinds of balls from all over the place. Skill set will come along with that the more you approach that in-game. The more you'll do, the better you'll get at it. But like, as in everything I've heard from players and everybody else about Johan van Kroon and everything else that's going on in the in preseason and building up, as they're really really digging what he's doing and the way he's looking to get Munster playing. Felix Jones, all these lads are involved. It's a collective thing, obviously, when they're coming to attack, and you can see the roots of it. You can see the passing that the likes of James Cronin and that Stephen Archer have been doing. The likes of, I think, Billy Holland made 12 passes against the Cheetahs. This is the kind of stuff that if you want to evolve and you want to take on the very best teams in Europe, you have to have that ability to play a little bit differently. Now, we also saw Munster going through the phases right around the corner. We saw that against the Ospreys as well. You're going to need to be able to play both ways. But this whole thing about having a plan A and plan B, look, Munster's plan A, if it goes wrong, you don't go to plan B, you make plan A better. I think what we're looking at is Munster looking to put that plan A that they were beginning last year, and now they're looking to try and implement it with the new players and with the fit again guys that they have. I'm particularly looking forward to seeing how the likes of Chris Farrell, how he does when he comes back in, to seeing him playing alongside Joey Carberry with the options that'll give Munster on phase play will be very, very interesting to see. And could push what they're looking to do game-wise. It'll give them all manner of different options, and it's just going to be interesting to see how it goes. But one way or the other, they're really digging it right now. They're going to be looking forward to the season, like you said. There's going to be a bit of pressure and expectation, because with every good performance becomes the expectation that you're going to do it again. There's a tough Heineken Cup pool this year. That'll be a bit of pressure, but I think once Munster manage to keep the main guys on the pitch, they'll be in a position where they'll be confident going up against anybody, be it Exeter, Gloucester, whatever else. They'll be happy enough taking these guys on wherever.
Yeah, they certainly will. Tom, some other other results from the weekend. Edinburgh beating Connacht 17-10 up in Murrayfield. Richard Cockerell unhappy with some of the refereeing here. The refereeing, there has been a bit... it hasn't exactly been covering. The referees haven't been covering themselves in glory over the first couple of weeks in the competition.
No, and this is something that has been a problem with the Pro 14 over the course of the last couple of years, I suppose. But then again, this is kind of endemic in the game itself. I think that it's becoming an increasingly difficult game to referee. I go back to last week against Glasgow, where Munster were, there should have been a Glasgow player potentially red carded had the actual footage of the incident being shown to the referee on the big screen TV. But somehow the producer and the Scottish TMO managed not to find that shot. And that's the kind of thing that makes people watching kind of go, like, this is bull, and when you get that, you're kind of going, well, everything else here now is a bit suspect as well. You're not looking for referees to be perfect. You're just looking for there to be as much consistency as possible. I thought Stuart Berry was fairly consistent on Friday with regards to his approach to the breakdown. He pinged Munster for a few that were wrong, and he pinged Ospreys for a few that I thought Munster were a little bit lucky to get away with as well. In this game, look, Richard Cockerell complains enough about referees for three or four director of rugby. So in a way, I'm kind of like a little bit reluctant to indulge him in this complaining about it. I will say that, there are certain referees where the standard is below what you'd expect for this level. And also admitting that referees have a very, very difficult job. The game is played faster than it ever has. The laws are quite complex when it comes to implementing them at speed and with the technicalities and everything else that comes with it. But I just think better consistency game to game would be a way to improve it and to have less variation between referees, as in certain referees have a certain focus for one aspect of the game, like the breakdown. other referees like Ben Whitehouse, the scrum is literally it's whoever is going forward gets the penalty regardless of what happened. And you know, as reluctant as I am to agree with Richard Cockerill on absolutely anything, I would say that the standard refereeing does need to improve, but it'll only improve by referees getting experience. And where else are they going to get it? It's just going to be a thing that I think around this time of year that you would just hope come once everybody's eye is in during the season that it will improve.
Yeah, having said that, another defeat for Connacht, you know, one win from their opening three. Not what they would have wanted, Tom, but you know, they're going to have to try and find their feet and find some consistency soon.
Yeah, look, they're playing well. Look, I think that Connacht will be incredibly dangerous, as they always are, at home in the Interpros. It's, you know, they're always able to get up in the sports ground to take on anybody, you know, and they were very, like I said, I think they went unbeaten in the sports ground last year in Interpros. You know, to put us, for them this year, they're going to be looking to get back into the playoffs. They're going to be looking to get back into the Champions Cup rugby. Do they have the squad for it? I'm not sure, but they do have a style of play, it seems, that suits the players who they have. It'll be interesting to see once they get Robin Copeland on the field, what he does for them, because I think he's a guy who can really, really improve what they're doing. But when I look at Jack Carr, he's playing very well. Boyle is playing very, very well. I can't wait to see Bundy Aki implemented fully back into this side. They've got a couple of good players who are coming their way as well. That new signing that's on the way from New Zealand looks a very decent player. I think once they all settle in and bed down, they'll be a very, very difficult side to beat in the sports ground. And once they get their home form started out, you know, can they pick up the few points away from home that they need? If they can, they're going to be in with a chance of qualifying for the playoffs. That's the way it works and worked last year in Conference A. I think it's going to be very similar this year. But it's whether or not they can actually just keep that pressure on at home to duplicate what they did last year. But it's going to be difficult for them. You know, they still have a few holes in their squad, I would say. But they seem, with Andy Friend, to have a guy who's, you know, a good quality guy to have around the place. The atmosphere seems better than what it was under the last spell anyway. And I think that if they can actually get, you know, their main guys on the pitch as much as possible, you know, in successive games, they'll, you know, at least duplicate what they did last year and maybe push on a little bit extra to challenge for the top three, or at least getting closer to that Champions Cup playoff.
Yeah, Leinster, Tom, 52-10 over Dragons. A bit of a pasting here. And, you know, we saw Leinster getting criticised by some of the Welsh media for sending an apparently substandard team over to Wales last time out. It didn't stop them from the opening game, I think it was. It didn't prevent them from winning that. But, you know, Leinster, I suppose, Tom, really, they're going to be the team to beat throughout the season in this competition. But and Dragons, the Bernard Jackman project, you know, still a hell of a lot of work to be done there.
There is. It's not easy for Bernard Jackman, and you know, to you know, with the Dragons, to improve them in the way that will be noticeable. They have a tough time. You know, it's like the region itself is quite new. They've got some good players in. You know, Ross Moriarty, you know, despite his, you know, he's a guy who's prone to be, you know, to playing the hard man a little bit too much. But you know what? They've got a decent enough squad there. They should do better this year than what they did last year. But, you know, it's one of those things where there are no poor Leinster teams. You know, the depth that they have, you know, Josh van der Fleer had a stormer there at the weekend, and he's possibly their third choice open side at the moment. You know, with Sean O'Brien, if he comes back, Dan Levy, they've got a lot of talent, you know, and it's really up to them this year. Can they handle the pressure that teams are going to look to bring on them? The Dragons didn't manage to do that in the RDS, but Scarlets put it well up to them last week, and there was a strong Leinster side went over there. You know, teams are going to be looking to measure themselves against Leinster, and with that comes a pressure in games that will be new to a lot of guys in this squad. It won't be new to the likes of Johnny Sexton, but how often will he be playing in the Pro 14 this year? You know, a run out against the Dragons was grand, you know. He certainly performed quite well. For Leinster, it'll be up to them really to keep you know, since losing Carberry, they look a little bit thin around the 10 spot. There might be some people from off the ball listening, and they may be getting upset at the thought of that. But it's like when they lost Carberry, all of a sudden now the huge depth they had at 10, it's not really there anymore. So again, last year I felt that they were quite fortunate with injuries in certain positions. They didn't get any mad injuries at 10, you know, because I think Leinster without Sexton are a very different side, the same way Ireland are. I mean, and like, as in, that seems like it's a knock on Leinster, but you know, you can't lose who for me is the best fly half playing the game at the moment in Johnny Sexton with regards to what he can give you. You can't lose a player like that who's as domineering as he is and not feel the effect. And that goes for Leinster and Ireland. So for me, Leinster will be there or thereabouts again in both competitions this year, as long as they don't experience any injuries to Luke McGrath, Johnny Sexton, long-term injuries to Gary Ringrose. Other than that, they should be able to compete because they've got the depth, you know. But it's you know, it'll be interesting to see how they go. They you know, did away with the Dragons fairly handily, but you'd expect them to do that at home. It's the ones where they have to go away. They'll be the games that'll be really tough for them this year because, you know, the teams, they're going to have a target on their back, and a lot of these lads will be able to handle it. Some lads won't, and it'll be interesting to see how they react as champions. But so far, it looks like they've just got a couple of new superstars on the way as well, with Caelan Doris, Max Deegan. It'll be interesting to see how they go. It's you know, when you see a team like that who look like they've got, you know, a dynasty potential about them, you know, you want to beat them. You want to assess yourself against them to see how you go. And that Interpro up in the Aviva is coming around the corner very quick. And this year, I think there'll be a little bit more spice to it than I think what there has been over the course of the last couple of years.
Yeah, there certainly will. Tom, Ulster made it 3 wins from 3 with a win over the Southern Kings down in South Africa. Tom, the South African teams have really struggled in the start of this year's Pro 14. But for Ulster, 3 from 3. And sitting on top of Conference B, just 1 point ahead of Leinster. But if you'd given that start to Ulster, I'm sure they'd have taken your hand off for it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've had a couple of handy fixtures, in fairness. You know, they've had 2 home games in a row against a weakened Scarlet side. I think it was Edinburgh then who they played. Going away to the Southern Kings, you'd expect them to push to, you know, to get the win over the Southern Kings. They weren't really as dominant on the scoreboard as what they possibly should have been in that game. But do you know what? It doesn't really matter how you get momentum. It's how you keep it going. And for Ulster, I think they're this year they've made a great start. If they can keep the likes of Marcel Kutsia, if they can keep Jordy Murphy, Martin Moore, John Cooney, if they can keep all these lads fit, they'll be troublesome for anybody. And, you know, obviously we've got to see how they stack up against the likes of, you know, a full strength Scarlet side, how they'll stack up against Munster, how they'll stack up against Leinster. We'll see that fair. We'll see it soon enough. But that'll be the question, how they handle those games and how then that translates into the Heineken Cup. We'll see what their pack will do then in that instance. But for, you know, for a start that they had, look, they had 3 handy enough fixtures. They won all 3. That's all that they could do. And they'll be hoping to push away on from here.
Yeah, they certainly will. Tom, we'll preview the weekend action, of course, on Thursday evening. But one incident over the weekend, Jordan Murphy coming out with some stupid, really, is not the only word for it, stuff in the aftermath of that red card in the Leicester game.
It was thick. It was one of the thickest things I've ever heard anybody say into a live mic after a sports, after a rugby game. Jordy Murphy had a player, Dominic Ryan, retire from the game at the age of 28 last week with concussion. And to have a guy then coming out in the aftermath of a guy getting a rattle into the head like that, and to talk about the game becoming too PC. First of all, I don't know what that means in the context of what he's talking about. I don't know how rugby as a game has become too politically correct. If he's speaking about how, you know, there's rightful care and attention going into making sure that lads aren't gibbering wrecks by the time they're in their mid-40s because of CTE and concussion symptoms, then yeah, I suppose maybe it is too politically correct. But other than that, it just seemed like he was trying to make some sort of appeal to those guys who've got motorbike avatars in their Twitter handles or Facebook saying how the game's gone soft and their couch slug is sitting at home. I can't understand how a director of rugby, especially a guy who would have lost a player in Dominic Ryan to concussion last week, would take such a tone in the aftermath of an in the aftermath of a game. I can tell he might be a little bit salty over losing. He is the Leicester Tigers director of rugby, so blaming referees and cribbing about decisions is something that will come naturally to him. But when it comes to this particular thing, the sensible option would be, yes, it was a red card, as the laws dictate today. We've just got to work on our discipline. We've got to work on our tackling profile just to do it. Everybody would look at it and go, look, that's unfortunate. You know, it's a tricky thing to happen, you know, in a game. There was no malice in it, but look, this is the type of tackle that we're looking to stamp out of the game. So, you know, there will be casualties. I understand people are kind of going, well, look, that wouldn't have been a red card, you know, 20 years ago. 20 years ago, you weren't having guys who are, you know, 6'8", nearly bones of 20 stone running around the place at the same pace that outside centres used to run in back in the day. You know, like, the game has changed. The physicality in the game is absolutely through the roof now. And it's not the same game. Lads going on about the game's going soft and all this. Like, the impact that players go in. I mean, do these guys go to games? Look at the size of these men. You know, like, I look at the likes of Gavin Coombs. Had a fantastic game for Munster at the weekend there. He's a back row, number 8. 6'5", verging on, you know, coming up on 18 stone. This guy's an animal. And that's the standard people look for now in back rows. That's the physicality that they want. So, like, the game has changed. Like, isn't he probably would have been a second row back in the day. You know, back in the... Willie John McBride, this legend of the game, he's 6'3". They might consider him for a blindside flanker these days. You know, the game is moving on to such big, powerful men running as fast as they've ever ran, as heavy as they've ever been. You have to do something to protect people's heads. You know, you have to do something to protect concussion. Jared Payne, an international, a lion, had to retire from the game because of the post-concussion symptoms that he had. The game is at a point now where it's coming to a tipping point where people in the future are going to wonder, well, what did the game try to do to protect people? Science has shown, and this is science, sports scientists researching the game, researching injuries, researching individual tackles over the course of a whole season or two or more, and coming to a conclusion that there are less concussions suffered when the tackle profile is lower. So that to me is worth 1 billion anecdotal bits of evidence from a former player or from a current player who doesn't want to be seen as soft. Oh, well, you know, we want to look after people's heads and stuff. Maybe these guys are still flexing. They want to be like, oh, you know, I'm tough. I'll tackle a guy with my head or whatever else. Dominic Ryan, I read his story in the paper the other day. He said he had a reckless approach to it. He said that his physicality to him was as important to him as what Johnny Sexton's ability to control the game would be to him. So in this tackle he made on George North that actually knocked him out, he had it in his head that, no, I'm not going to say that I was knocked out. Not going to say that. So he just said he was winded when he came to before the physio came to him. Physio didn't take him off. He ended up staying in field. He played again the week after, came on as a replacement. He got another headbang the week after that. And then he got another one then in training, and to the point where he was having debilitating migraines, couldn't really think properly, had tunnel vision at times. This is serious stuff. You know, if you break your leg, you can put a cast on it. If you mess your brain up, your brain is messed up. They cannot fix that. So if your brain is at a point where, you know, it's being damaged, these are traumatic brain injuries. If guys aren't getting properly seen after and they're getting hurt, if you hurt your brain is hurt for life. There's no fix for that. There's no cast you can put on that that'll make it better. So guys have to really see and look. Sam Whitelock, I think it was, with the All Blacks, knew that he wasn't right after his concussion thing that he had. So he took that extra time because he knows it's better to take an extra 2 or 3 months now than to come back too soon and end up being not able to play with his kids when he's 40. not be able to remember his wife's name when he's 50. You know, it's more important than putting a big hit in a Sunday for lads at home to be clapping, oh yeah, boomfa, whatever stuff they're doing these days on Instagram videos to try and make people look cool. I think when you see Jordan Murphy doing stuff like that in the aftermath of the game, saying that, oh, it's rugby, it's gone too PC. What you're seeing there is a director of rugby saying that it's okay for his players to not lower their tackle profile, to keep, you know, because the game isn't changing. You know, the world rugby are not going to go backwards on this. So he's when he does that, he's winking to his players saying, hey, lads, look, that was bullshit. Don't worry about that. Keep doing what you're doing. They'll keep on getting red card, yellow card, and you know they'll be in a position where guys will still be getting hurt, and they're still like even today. I was talking about it on Twitter, and some guy came back to me. Oh well, what about Bianu last year, when he broke his jaw on Andrew Conway's head? It's a completely different situation, but people are still looking at it. Look, and I get it. When you get a guy red carded, it's you're upset because it changes the game. And okay, maybe it's okay to be upset. But you expect better from a director of rugby. He's not sitting in the stands yelling at the referee. You've got to have better standards from him to help protect the game and protect the future of the game. Because if there's one thing that's coming down the tracks for all contact sports, it's concussion litigation. What are you doing to protect the players who are playing now and the players who are playing in the future? Because I can guarantee when you see players getting knocked out on the field, lying down on the ground, prone, absolutely just like knocked out, that takes a future player away from the game, because there's a parent looks at that and there's going, no way my kid is playing that. The less time that happens, the better. And science and research has shown that if there's a lower tackle, there'll be less knockouts, there'll be less concussions, there'll be less head injuries and less traumatic brain injuries. That can only be good for the game. And, you know, a guy like Jordan Murphy complaining like that in the aftermath of a game, not only is it laughable, embarrassing, it's the kind of thing that actively damages the future of the game.
Yeah, it certainly does. Tom, just a quick look back at the two rugby championship games over the weekend. Australia, a very, very disappointing loss at home to the Argentinians. And there was some unsavoury scenes between one of the Australian players and a member of the crowd in the aftermath of that game. Michael Checa under pressure in the Australian hot seat.
Oh, he is, yeah. Argentina played very well. I thought that in the aftermath of the All Blacks games and the manner of the win against South Africa, that Australia would have enough for Argentina. But they didn't. They didn't play very well at all. And it just seems like he can't get any sort of collective run of form together that would, you know, do the job for him. Now, I think he was missing Michael Hooper for that game. That will definitely affect your game against the Wallabies. You have to, or the Pumas, sorry, you have to be able to slow them down. You know, but it's just, you know, I mean, you see the unsavoury scenes in the aftermath, some clown in the crowd having a go at a player, you know, the player having a go back. I believe that guy, Lucan Tui, had lost his father, I think only just a couple of days prior. So you can forgive him his outbursts if you have some idiot in the crowd jawing at him after the game. You know, it's just one of those things where there seems to be a bad buzz around Australian rugby at the moment. And I think until they can sort that out, which is, you know, easier said than done, then I think it'll just continue to be as it is, where you might have one decent result, one bad one. They've got to go to South Africa, yes. You know, so it could get a lot worse for them, you know, because they would have been figuring, well, at least this year we could finish second behind the All Blacks. But then seeing South Africa doing in New Zealand while Australia couldn't do, that'll make things harder for Michael Checa, believe it or not. Well, you know, so they've got a lot of work ahead of them, and if they can get their the likes of Pocock and Hooper back on the same side, you know, they'll be a lot better off. But you know, the pressure's only going to get more intense for Checa as the season develops.
Yeah, it certainly is. Tom, flicking over to Wellington, the caked in, and and New Zealand versus South Africa. Tom, after I think it was after the first 10 minutes of this game, when it was 12-0, I text you saying, Jesus, Razzie has some job with this lot on his hands. I was made to look rather stupid by the end of it, but having said that, Tom, over 75% possession, over 75% territory, how did New Zealand contrive to lose this match and end up coughing up a try bonus point to the Springboks in the process?
It was just a very strange game. It really was. Fair play to the Springboks. They rolled their luck at times. It was just a bizarre game. You know, I think it reminded me very much of the last time Nigel Owens refereed the All Blacks in New Zealand, where they also had a huge, massively high-scoring game. I'm not sure what this means for the Springboks, whether they've turned the corner or not. I'd have to see them how they fare in the return game in South Africa without Nigel Owens refereeing, because he can sometimes be a bit of a leveler between sides. And I'm only saying that just because it just seems to happen so often when he's refereeing. But what I did see from them was a lot of heart, a lot of decent defense, especially towards the end. But an uncharacteristic, sloppy display from the All Blacks at home as well, which would be absolutely disgusting for them. It's going to be very difficult for South Africa to handle the backlash that's coming their way. The All Blacks will be stewing on this. To be beaten at home, if you're an All Black, it's a shameful thing, you know. And to speak, you know, to lose to a team in South Africa who, you know, they've certainly improved as of late, but when they say, you know, they were preparing for this game, they were targeting this game for the last 2 weeks. They did rest some guys against Australia to hit this game. But, you know, New Zealand they should be beating South Africa. They'll know that. South Africa will also know that they got, you know, they certainly earned their victory, but there was an element of a handy one about it. We'll see once they go back to South Africa to take on the All Blacks there, because that would be a different beast. Beating the All Blacks once, you can do it. Ireland have done it. But then 2 weeks later, we had to take them on again at home, and it was a different animal altogether. The level of physicality in that game would be through the roof. It's going to be some game to watch, but it's good to see the Springboks get that win all the same. The Razzie has done a good job since he's gone back there. He had a great series against England in the summer. They're not perfect by any means. They still have some players to find, I think. But when they perform as they did there, they're a very difficult side to deal with. And, you know, from an Irish perspective, we're going to be playing one of these two teams in possibly in a World Cup quarterfinal next year. So it'll be of interest to see how that second game goes, because, you know, they're all going to be looking at us. They're going to be looking at Ireland to see where we are at. We've got the All Blacks coming up later this year as well. So there's going to be lots to look at to see how you can crack the All Blacks. If South Africa can do it again, there could be something seismic happening in the world of rugby where things maybe are changing a little bit. But we're a year out from a World Cup, so I think there's a lot of road to run yet. But great performance in the Springboks all the same.
Tom, tell us a little bit about what's coming up in Three Red Kings Patreon page this week.
Three Red Kings Premium this week and patreon.com/3RedKings. So just €2 a month, you can access some of the stuff I've got going on there right now, which is an article on Munster's work in the breakdown, how we're attacking off breakdown. That's up there right now. I'll be having one as well, looking at the impact of Joey Carberry over the course of the last three games, how he the way he plays is critical to the way that Munster are going to look to play going forward. And of course, I'll have other podcasts, the Red Eye coming up for Cardiff, and a few other things coming up this week on patreon.com/3RedKings for just €2 a month.
And of course, Tom, let's not forget you are also going to be back in the Limerick Post again this weekend. Tell us what the readers can look forward to.
Coming off my column this week in Limerick Post, they're going to be looking at the nature of depth and how teams look to try and build it and develop it, but then use it once they have it over the course of the season to make sure that they've got the top guys ready and, you know, raring to go come, you know, playoffs and knockout rugby.
Excellent. And just for anyone listening, make sure you do, if you do have a spare €2 per month, get on to Patreon, to the Three Red Kings Patreon page. Some really interesting tactical stuff on there. Tom, talk to you next on Personal.